Listen, these last like 5 days, I've had a sore in my nose that's like a super rock hard booger, but it's not. It's not a booger. It's this, like, you can't touch it. It's so painful. You do anything, it bleeds. I don't know how to get rid of it. It is the worst. I stuck some toothpaste up there.
Toothpaste?
That only stung. I don't recommend that.
Did you put some Betty Crocker up there next? You're like, I'm just going to see what else I have laying
right,
around
that's
here.
That's where I'm at. Like, anything at this point I'm willing to try.
Yeah, if you, now, toothpaste, do you typically put that exterior, right? Or what is it called on your body? Posterior?
Posterior? No, the posterior is something different.
No, what is it on the not, because not subcutaneously, that would be
right. No, it'd be topical.
Topical. Okay, so yeah. So you're putting a toothpaste on the outside because the idea is that it would suck up a pimple, right?
I guess. I mean, I don't use that for pimples.
I use
it for cavities.
Right. And, apparently for
and sores in my nose.
And sores in your nose. Yep. I never saw that on the side of the tube. Interesting. Mm-hmm. Now, what is the worst kind of pimple you've ever gotten? Is this the
worst? This one by far. You ever get one that's like in your eyebrow?
You know, it's so funny you mention that. The reason I bring that up is because I have one right now. Mm. But it's not in my eyebrow. It's where, like, if I had a unibrow like you do, it would be, it's like right where the unibrow would go. But I don't have that. Mm. And I think I get it because, you know, I'll have to wear makeup on my day job. And if I don't properly sort of scrub my face, mm-hmm. when I get home, you know, then if I just say, I'll shower the next morning, but I've used like baby wipes to get the stuff off my face, then the next morning, you know, then it starts to get a little bad. You know, then my skin starts to get a little funky.
Mm-hmm. The thing I don't like about the eyebrow one is if you decide that you're going to pop it, you need to exterminate the pimple. For some reason, like because of where the nerves are clustered above your eye or something, it feels like your whole body is in pain. You know what I mean? Like, all your nerve endings everywhere throughout your body, like, shoot with pain as you're trying to get rid of this eyebrow pimple. Like, why? Why is it? Why is my body connected that way?
Yeah, I remember. I think the worst. Yeah, I'm trying to remember the worst are. I've gotten one. The worst actually is. Do you ever get the one like by your earlobe?
Earlobe? I don't know that I have.
Like in the crook near your earlobe. And that's a painful one. Because it doesn't take, it takes a long time to form. So, you know, you're trying to do the preemptive attack on it, which you only make it worse, right? You don't necessarily exacerbate its growth.
Right, right.
Like you're kind of teasing it along. Like, hey, I know you're not ready to be gone with yet, but I'm gonna molest you.
You're irritating it.
Right.
On its way in. So by the time it gets to you, it's already spiteful.
Right. I'm just molesting it a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you ever get one like just in a random place on your body, like on your arm or something? Like you just don't, you're like, what is that?
A couple weeks ago, I got one right on my kneecap. And I thought, well, I don't know. Like, do they still make, maybe this is a really dated reference. I don't know. Do they still make Stridex pads?
Boy, aren't those things terrible?
Right, like I don't even know if they still exist. Like, did the government finally come in and say, you know these aren't safe, right?
Right.
You know that when these sting and burn away the top layer of your epidermis, you know that this can't be good for everyone. Like, has there been a government-issued moratorium on Stridex pads? I know that's like a really 90s, like late 80s, early 90s reference.
Remember the commercials, too? It was always like those teenagers who were like, you know, trying to get with the girl, trying to get with the guy, right?
And it was like this one of like a teenage girl dancing to like music, and she's cleaning her face with these like super acidic Stridex pads, which, you know, burnt like all get out.
Right.
You know, like, they hurt so bad to come in contact with your skin, but she has, like, a big smile on her face, and she's
right.
dancing while she's doing it. And I'm thinking, this is, like, the most incorrect interpretation or representation of what the Stridex experience is like. Because we all tried them. If you were around when that was marketed heavily, they made it sound like this was – and, you know, at the time when we were in junior high, when perhaps that was more of an issue for us, you know, we thought this is what we've been waiting for. These little white discs that you rub on your face will make the pimples go away. It just made your whole face go, you know.
Sore. You know, it'd be like dried and sore.
Your
and
face
it
was like
work.
Flush. You had like a magenta face. You couldn't notice the acne anymore because the rest of your face was the same color as the acne.
Right,
it just looked like it went away.
It was like using sand. You might as well, you know what, it's just as effective as grabbing sandpaper. Seriously, it would have been the same thing. Just grab some sandpaper from dad's woodshed, sand your face down.
Put a little vinegar on it.
Right. Exactly. That's all it is, probably. It's a brilliant marketing thing. I just jumped on Amazon to see if it's for sale. Uh-huh. Stridex pads. Oh, and sure. And now there's a whole line of them. There's the medicated pads, Stridex medicated pads.
I do remember Stridex medicated, right. I remember that.
We had the daily care. They had the nighttime ones.
Mm-hmm. You know what the difference between them was, by the way? The label.
Right, exactly.
Same product.
This label for the nighttime one is just like a calming blue, right?
Right, with the moon.
Because the calming blue is what's used to describe nighttime things, right? Mm-hmm. Tylenol PM is in a blue bottle. Mm-hmm. Advil PM, it's blue. Mm. NyQuil, blue. Stridex night care pads, blue. Unisom, blue. Mm-hmm. Tampax, blue. Mm-hmm. But there's a whole litany of these, man. Stridex triple action, because you want extra action. Why would you just settle for one action? If you can get triple action, that's where it's at for my money.
Right. Absolutely.
And man, you can get us. And the worst part is if you ever left the jar open. Did you ever do that? Where you accidentally left the lid off of them?
I only really ever tried those things once, and like it was such an awful experience for me. I don't even know that I finished the jar. I just like tossed it.
I used them quite a bit. I think it was like masochism. There was no other choice just to use those things. There wasn't any other real choice out there in the field of acne reduction. And to be honest, I wasn't one of those kids that had like a mask of acne growing up. Mm-hmm. I would get like one pimple every week, but it was annoying enough. And I thought, okay, if I can just preemptively keep my skin clean, you know, I guess soap and water in the shower wasn't enough, right? You had to use Stridex to get down deep into the pores. Did you ever try those Biore strips?
Yes. I tried one. I think it was on my nose.
Yeah.
At the end, I think it's like putting masking tape on your face for 20 minutes and then ripping it off. That's right. You could achieve that with masking tape.
This is someone who's experimented, by the way.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, I have a lot of adhesives like that. I've got duct tape at the house here. I've scotch tape, masking tape, electrical tape. And of these tapes that you could put on your face to replicate the Biore experience without paying $8.99 for a box of these strips would be to take a strip of the masking tape you already have, let it stick on your face until it's completely dried and worked its way in, and then rip it off.
Right. And then look to see if you've got the little blackheads. Did you ever see that thing? It was like in, I don't know, different magazines, but you could order blackhead remover.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I mean,
which is disgusting. I mean, I would never.
It seemed to me like I never saw one in person. I always saw like the ad that had like a photo or an illustration of it. But
you know where
we used to get that a lot? When we used to get those giant mailers from Columbia House.
That's where I used to see
that. That would have all those coupons and advertisements for other products.
I was wondering where
I saw it regularly. Always a blackhead remover ad in there, and it was like, looked like some kind of suction thing you put on your face.
Right. And it would just suck them out. That'd be the most disgusting thing in the world. I mean, and they're not hurting you, right? You've maybe got some clogged pores, so much so that you need to get a vacuum appliance to suck them out of your face. This could be really smart. Oh, the things that we were concerned with. I do remember, though, right before like a big dance in like ninth grade, getting a giant one on my nose. Mm. And I looked like Rudolph. Mm-hmm. And I thought, I'm going to, you know, and I didn't realize at the time, like, you could use toothpaste, not tooth gel, but toothpaste, and it would suck the moisture out of it and basically kill it in like a day. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's why you would put a little dollop of toothpaste on a pimple.
I see.
Like a big one, like one you really needed to deal with. Mm-hmm. For the most part, if I get
when
one
you
now,
were out of options.
Right. When you were completely out of options, when you didn't order the blackhead sucker in the mail, you didn't do the preemptive Stridex pads, and then you had a giant one you had to deal with, you might put some toothpaste on it to dry it out for like an hour. You'd leave it on there. Of course, then your nose smelled minty fresh, which is also smart. But then I thought I locked myself in the bathroom.
I think that was the way in junior high, though.
Man, Clayton's nose.
Did you dance with Clayton tonight? He smells like a tube of AIM.
He's got terrible breath, but his nose smells minty fresh. I can't explain it. And then you have so then I locked myself in the bathroom, and I was like, I've got to figure something out.
I am not coming out of here until I figure something out.
Nicole,
like, where's the plunger?
I was like, I figured if I sanitized a needle, and then I did this, I took a needle and I sanitized it. And I thought, you know what? Sanitizing it, I don't need to put it in boiling water. All I need to do is just run it under the hot water faucet because that's got to be hot enough, right? That would kill bacteria. No, because it turns out that boiling is when bacteria is killed. You can't just run it under warm, like warm lukewarm water that you'd get out of a faucet.
Oh, no.
That doesn't work, despite what the CDC says. So I ran this needle, like a sewing needle, under the hot water, and then I proceeded to surgically go at my face. Didn't work, and then it just became infected, and it looked worse, and I looked like Rudolph. And then I had to try to find some of my like my mom's makeup to try to cover this up. Because it was just brutal.
It's a vicious... Once you start down that path...
Right.
Right. Now you're starting to go through the female in the house's makeup trying to figure out... And you're not...
Have you ever done that?
Someone's out there knocking on the door. What's going on in there? Just give me a minute.
Just give me a minute.
You're not using my stuff, are you?
I'm Teen Wolf. I'm hiding in the bathroom until the moon goes away. Do you ever have that happen?
No, I've never turned into a werewolf. I've had some... I mean, nothing springs to mind. I wish I had a zany story like that I could recount for you right now. But every once and again, I do come across this, which is kind of bizarre. You know, depending on what type of chemicals end up in your body, I have, in my profession, come across people that have outrageous cases of what is called bacne. Acne of the back. And I do have some now. Bearing in mind here, shortly when we take a break here, and Clayton's telling you about one of our sponsors, I'm going to go upstairs and get something to drink because my throat's a little raw, and I might have a snack. And because I want to maintain my appetite,
right?
I'm not going to share with you any crazy stories that I know about bacne.
I do recall sitting in biology class in what was Mr. Dom's biology class? Was it like 10th grade?
Oh, I didn't have Dom's.
He was fantastic.
What did I have in 10th? Did I have Gary Williamson? I think I had him twice. I had Williamson twice. I didn't have Dom's.
But sitting behind, or I sat behind a girl who used to wear sundresses all the time, and she suffered from this affliction that you speak, and it was bad because I couldn't divert my gaze. You know, it was an odd sight, and I thought there's got to be a fix for that.
Yeah.
Right? She is obviously not made aware of that. We're in biology class. Perhaps we can solve it with some beakers and Bunsen burners and stuff. But I guess that's chemistry class.
I met a guy over the weekend, by the way, who had a strong resemblance to Beaker from the Muppets.
Really? I knew a guy that looked like that, too.
Right, yeah. And it was definitely one of those cases where I had spoken to this man on the phone a number of times. In my mind, he had like a New York mafioso. What do I want to say? He conjured like this sort of like overweight New York mafioso kingpin like mental image. And then to meet him and he resembled Beaker from the Muppets was like so incredibly, contrasted by what my mental image of him was. Like I almost thought it was like an imposter, even though I had no idea what he looked like.
Like a big letdown.
He came up and introduced himself. And I'm like, no way, because I've been picturing you in my brain for months. And, you know, like you're the kingpin from Daredevil is what you're supposed to be.
Right.
And you're Beaker. So
you were sadly let down by all this.
Right. Yeah. I was like, oh, come on.
So you had a big week, of course. This was a huge week for you.
My God, was it ever. Yes, indeed it was for a variety of reasons. But
you just sound exhausted. There's been weekends, wrestling weekends, where you've sounded worse off on a Monday. But this, you don't sound that bad. You just sound a little, scratchy throat, maybe. Yeah, a little tired throat.
Yeah. I'm beat. I feel beat today.
Yesterday
was a long day at the office in every sense of the word. In every way a pro wrestler means that, I mean that. And that's because yesterday... not to overlook the events of Saturday night in Easton, which was a great event, but I didn't have to wrestle. I did have to wrestle yesterday, though, for our pay-per-view debut, Chikara's pay-per-view debut, High Noon, which was carried out, I think it was 32 countries across the world, and was seen not only by the largest Chikara audience to ever appear in Philadelphia and broke our previous attendance record, which was set in that same building, I think, 2 years ago. But it was also seen by thousands of people around the world as well. And in terms of what our expectations were for it and everything else, it just blew us away. we just saw such an incredible outpouring in them. Last night, after high noon was over with, you know, a lot of us went out to dinner together to just kind of unwind, and of course Clayton played a role in this as well, as I'll tell you in a second. It just seemed like this massive team effort by everybody to get this thing into the end zone and make it the success that it ended up being. And we were just out there doing every kind of media appearance that we could possibly do. And the hands-down highlight of it really came Sunday morning. And this is where you kind of factor in. In fact, do you mind telling a little bit of your side of the story here?
So Greg Iron, who happens to be a professional wrestler, who has, of course, took part in the High Noon event on Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon at 4 p.m. I mean, I had only learned about him through you just a short time ago, but then learned that, of course, he suffers from cerebral palsy.
Right.
So that's remarkable in and of itself. And so we had scheduled to have him actually come on Fox and Friends because the story is pretty remarkable. Here's a guy who had overcome incredible odds in his life. You know, his mom just passed away last year. He had grown up in a family that where his mom was like addicted to crack cocaine. Mm-hmm. He had cerebral palsy. He basically ended up raising, I think, his like younger sister as a result.
Mm-hmm. Something like that, yeah.
Just, you know, remarkable odds. So for any of us, you know, for most of us, right, we would just check out, right? Just be like, mm-hmm. That's it. One of these things is bad enough to have mm-hmm. all of those things. But anyway, he found pro wrestling to be his salvation, the thing that mm-hmm. drove him, you know, the thing that he was obsessed with and drove him to be to never give up. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, we had him on the show Sunday morning and, you know, received tons of emails from folks who have a disability or have cerebral palsy and who were thrilled to see, you know, this gentleman who they weren't familiar with, or some were. I have to say, like, the studio crew, like, after he got off the set, like, they all flocked over to him. You know, these are guys who, you know, they love UFC, you know, love, like, Ultimate Fighting. They, you know, they're into boxing, they're in that stuff, and they like wrestling. So they just pulled him aside. They're like, oh, that's great. You know, you're doing the pay-per-view at the event this afternoon. They all knew about it. You know, they were all, like, excited to talk to him. And of course, he put out a big call to get Vince McMahon to include him in the Royal Rumble and all of these other things. So he was a hit. He was a gracious guy, and it was fascinating to hear his story. And then, of course, that was a few hours, I guess, ahead of the High Noon event.
Right. And Greg's story, as you said, I mean, it's an inspirational story. It's an incredible story, and best of all, it's a true story. He was part of it, and he was supposed to be with us the night before in Easton. And as you and I kind of discovered, ultimately, like, we had to try and team up because of how the disaster was going down. Greg, who was supposed to be in Easton Saturday night, his car blew up.
Right. So if it wasn't bad enough that he comes from this broken home.
Right. Like, if all the circumstances of his life aren't sufficiently tragic for you.
Right.
On his way to appear in Easton for a wrestling match and then carry on to New York City to tell his story to the world, courtesy of our friends at Fox and Friends, his car blows up while he's 4 hours from Easton in a town where there's no rental car place, there's no bus stop, there's nothing. Like everything else about this weekend wasn't enough on top of itself. So, you know, we had to actually deploy somebody who drove the 4 hours to get him and bring him the 4 hours back to Easton. And by the time he got back, the event was well over. I mean, the ring had been disassembled, loaded back into the truck. The crew was leaving to go back to Philadelphia to start set up for the next day, you know, the following day's pay-per-view. And then Greg arrived at the building. Everyone was really just, it was one of those situations where the irritation, the frustration that came from it was based on your helplessness. You know, there was nothing direct that we could do to really help Greg other than you're just going to have to sit where you are until someone comes to get you. You know, so, you know, you can imagine how frustrating that must have been for him.
Right.
It was very frustrating for us. And of course, we were really, really worried because we knew how key this opportunity was to have him on Fox and Friends to tell his story to the world. And we just kept thinking, like, oh, God, we can't. We can't screw this up.
Yeah.
And
he had said, you know, when I saw, he said, you know, it didn't matter. He said, oh, I was going to get here. He goes, I have no car anymore. Mm-hmm. My car's gone. It exploded. Mm-hmm. My engine exploded. He's like, I have no car. He's like, but I had to get here. Mm-hmm. And I said, that's it. I'm going to get there. I'll find a way. That's it. There's no discussion about it.
Right.
I will will it to happen.
Yes. And, you know, I think that's really the story of High Noon at large. Like, not only just all the, you know, whether it was television or radio, podcast, print, online media, whatever the case was, I think that really came through, whether, you know, you saw an interview that I did or one of the other members of the Chikara roster. If you saw Greg on the weekend on Fox and Friends or whatever it might have been, it really was like this massive team effort, including thanks to my friend Clayton. It just felt like we all kind of willed High Noon to be this success, and we wanted it so badly, like I said, to get that into the end zone. And then we did. And yesterday, I've remarked in a number of interviews about how emotional King of Trios was this past year, which is a massive three-day wrestling event that Chikara produces. And part of the reason that that was the case, that it was so emotional, was it fell just days after we lost one of our own, Sweet and Sour Larry Sweeney. And so the round robin tournament that followed was named the 12 Large Summit, which was a tribute to him and even includes his initials, LS. And the 12 Large Summit, in keeping with the thematic relevance of the number 12, concluded at High Noon, which, among other things, is an allusion to the beloved 80s cartoon Mask, and the iconography of the event reflects this. Yesterday, because it was like the conclusion, it almost felt like the duration of the 12 Large in some ways came to represent our grieving for our lost friend. And this was the conclusion of it. You know, this was the end of our catharsis. And the fact that our friends, you know, as we know them, Oliver Sweeney and Amy Sweeney were there. And the fact that everybody, I mean, just not everybody, there obviously were a couple exceptions, but that so many of the past people that are important to the Chikara story, all the way back to the co-founder of Chikara Wrestle Factory, Reckless Youth Tom Carter, putting in an appearance, everyone came out of the woodwork to make this thing wow. Something really, really special. And even though I don't know that I'm not really sure if the live audience was aware of this or not, but even having former WWF superstar and Intercontinental Champion Marty Jannetty backstage helping everyone and being there with a critique or feedback or pointers or jumping in with a little bit of advice for somebody or pulling the guys aside as they came back and talking to them about the performance and everything else, there was this overwhelming positivity and this optimism, and there was so much room for so much stuff to go horribly, horribly wrong. Because it's our first time doing a live pay-per-view event, right? I mean, we've never done live before. My friend Clayton Morris, you've been doing live TV for how many years now?
Oh, God, since like 99 in there somewhere, 99.
Right. So going without a net is old hat to you.
Well, but, I mean, stuff goes wrong. And, you know, stuff goes wrong every day. You know, in a four-hour show, there's bound to be something that, we screw up.
Sure, but luckily, I mean, where you are, you've got some of the best people anywhere in the world working with you. And you've got tons of experience doing it. And the medium is somewhat time-tested, whereas streaming internet pay-per-views is a relatively new innovation.
Right.
And a lot of the people that came together, the various teams that had to work together, the team from GoFight Live, the team from Smart Mark Video, the team from Pancoast Productions, and everybody else had to work together seamlessly to deliver this thing, which we've spent a long, long time getting to. And everybody did their job. Everybody came to play, and everybody knocked it out of the park. And when it was over, I think not obviously it was an emotional response, because if you saw the finale and you saw the genuine tears in people's eyes as the event was closing, what made it even better was last night when we finally all rolled home after having dinner, and I can't tell you the last time I feel as beat up as I feel today. To go online and see whether it was just like the volume of tweets or the emails, the response, the talk on message forums, and everywhere, this enormous positivity that says, you did it. And Clayton and I are of a similar mindset, and we have been, you know, through our childhood right up till now, that there could be 1,000 people out there that tell us what a great job we did. But when one person tells us something negative, or criticizes us, or just craps in our Wheaties, we obsess on that one negative thing.
Oh, yeah. You know,
that one tiny dissenting voice somehow out-screams the 1,000 contrarian opinions. And I don't know what that defect in our brain is that we do that. But what I loved about the experience I had, I slept in a little bit today. I took my time doing everything I had to do. and I just wanted to soak in what the feedback from everybody was. That dissenting opinion, that one complainer, wasn't out there. And that was like the most satisfying thing. And I realize it's coming any moment now. But
right, I just sent you one.
Right, thank you. Yeah, it was posted on Chikara101.com. C.B. Morris
right.
just made his first post. That really told the tale, and it made it so satisfying. And in addition to which, I don't know about where you're at today. It's a gorgeous autumn day here. Like it's just, and there's a calm. Like we did it. We worked tirelessly for weeks to carry this into the end zone, and we did it. And it's very satisfying for about 5 minutes.
Right. Then you move on to the next thing. You know,
right.
I just finished reading the Steve Jobs biography yesterday, and 600 pages of goodness. And I think it should be sort of mandatory reading for every business, you know, business school person who's thinking about opening their own business, about how to do it right. You know, about how to demand perfection. I mean, obviously without being as much of a, you know, maybe hard on his employees, that he admitted towards the end of his life, he didn't need to necessarily be as hard. But nevertheless, like demanding perfection, you know, other companies might have shipped products that maybe the third generation of a product that they're working on. And by the time they actually end up shipping it, going back and forth over the finest little detail, you know, that ends up being like the 50th iteration. But other companies would just ship it at three, you know. He would obsess over the details. They would obsess over the details of everything to make it as good as it could be. And, you know, when you're that concerned and you're that vested in the product and the performance of it, you're not in it to make money. You're in it because you love it. It speaks volumes about it. Steve Jobs talked about growing up, he had no money, so he was poor. He's like, I never worried about money when I was poor. And then when I made millions of dollars and became a billionaire or became a millionaire, I never worried about money. So there's something to be said, sort of Zen-like in that approach, you know?
Sure. And I think, now I have not read the Jobs biography, but one thing I think I understand about him, you know, and most of what I know about it actually is by proxy. It's from my podcasting partner here. And I know this about other people, whether they're a success, right? I mean, Steve Jobs obviously experienced not all of his success, but a majority of it in the technological field. He was certainly much more diverse than that. But to get to where, you know, when he really was at the peak, when he was the guy that defined him, the industry, you only really get to that point when you, if you are possessed of a drive that outshines the drive of all others. And to get to that point, sometimes, you know, I think, like you said, Steve Jobs maybe later on looks back and reflects on some of the things that he did and thinks, oh, maybe I could have done it a little bit differently. But if he did, if he had done those things differently, he wouldn't have arrived at the point, he never would have made it to the pinnacle. There's a relentless drive and pursuit that just has to engulf you if you want to drive something that you really and truly believe in to the top. And it sometimes isn't pretty. And people
right.
that lack that drive will never understand it. People that can never commit themselves as wholeheartedly and invest their entire passion into something like that will look at something like what you might see in the pages of that Steve Jobs biography and think, wow, I can't believe that, or I can't relate to that. And that's true, because the vast majority of the people walking the planet aren't Steve Jobs.
Right.
The vast majority of the people walking the planet will never have his ingenuity, they'll never have his drive, they'll never have his dedication, and they'll never experience all the different types of success he did. He's a very unique individual in that way, and people like him are very, very unique and oftentimes misunderstood individuals.
Yeah, I would say so. And, you know, people look and say, oh, they could criticize his family, you know, how much time he did spend with his kids, and he wished that he had spent more time. You know, they're, you know, flawed, no one's perfect. They're all, you know, everyone's flawed individual. Mm-hmm. I think that those individuals who are the crazy ones, so to speak, are the ones that really drive the innovation, do the things that other people aren't willing to do, and take those big leaps, you know, that other companies weren't willing to make.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that wholeheartedly.
So, anyway, we've got a lot more to talk about today.
Oh, my God, do we? And we even have some guests coming to visit us, Clayton.
Yeah, we do. Just on the other side of this break, we're going to jump on the line with our friends from the Weekly Long Box, which is our new comic book show, which is going to be launching. When are we launching that? Just a few weeks from now, or a week from now, right?
I think it might even be later this week.
Hmm. So very good. So we will have the brand new weekly long box or comic book show. These guys are incredibly knowledgeable about all the books. They read all of the books. They're at the comic shop every week. They teach us a thing or two. So we'll be jumping on the line with Todd and Leonard in just a moment. But first...
Yeah, we need to stop while I put some Colgate up my nose, and Clayton is going to tell you about one of our great show sponsors.
Yeah, I'll tell you about the fine folks over at Cobra Electronics. Now, these guys make two great products. If you've not heard of Cobra Electronics, and I don't know what you're missing. I don't know where you've been. I've been maybe perhaps hiding under a rock or something like that. But hey, it's almost Christmas time, right? I think it's 40 days until Christmas, if you can believe it. So if you celebrate that, if you give any gift this year and you want to give something special to your loved one, you got to check them out. They make an incredible radar detection device for your car. Sleek, compact detection device, plugs right into your cigarette lighter, works flawlessly, and it pairs with your smartphone. So you download the free application from your app store, the Android marketplace, on your different device. You launch the app, and your smartphone screen becomes like an interface and lets you know what's going on with your car. It shows the speed of your car. You can track that. Can tell you where the red light cameras are. Gives you the alerts. All the alerts pop right up on your screen. So when your radar detector beeps at you and lets you know what's going on. And it says pop alert or, red light or camera area. Then you get to see right on the screen what's going on as well. And certainly it works fantastically. I mean, as much as I drive and driving through near speed traps, let you know, hey, there's a speed trap approaching, and there's a social component so people can punch in, let people know that a speed trap is there, and it adds to the database so that maybe later in the afternoon I'm driving by. Somebody who was driving before me may have just added this to the database. It works great. They've also come out with the tag, the Cobra tag. This works great. It sticks right on your keychain, and you'll never lose your keys again because it'll beep, and it'll let you know where your keys are based on your smartphone. So you launch the app on your smartphone, and it tracks your keys. It says, hey, they're right over there, and it works in reverse. So you can't find your smartphone. You hit the little button on the side of the Cobra tag on your keys, and boom, it finds your smartphone. We were just driving today. We were driving up to the Poconos this afternoon. And I said to my wife, where the heck is my cell phone? You know, you lose it all the time. It might be in a seat cushion. It might be in a bag upstairs. Difficult to find. So instead of having to bother someone else to call your phone for you, just use the Cobra tag. It works that great. We want you to check them out. And we thank them so much for our support of the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, the longest running show here on the network. When you tweet about us, tweet that you like Cobra Electronics on Twitter. We really appreciate it. We should also mention here, we haven't done this in a while. Head on over to the iTunes store if you download us through iTunes. We got a lot of new people listening to the show. And just punch in a nice little 5-star review there in iTunes. Just type out one sentence why you like the show and give us a nice little 5-star review. It helps other people discover the show. So we just call on you to do that once in a while. And we thank Cobra for their support of this show.
Mm-hmm. Well, just a week away from the launch of their very own podcast, The Weekly Long Box, Clayton and I would like to welcome back to the program our friends, Todd and Leonard. Gents, how are you?
Hey, guys.
Doing good. Thanks for having us back again before our big debut.
Absolutely. A lot of folks loved it on Twitter. They're gearing up for The Weekly Long Box, and we will have a Twitter account up and running very soon for you guys. We've already secured that, and so good stuff coming from you guys, and people excited about it.
And we're excited here about all the comics that have been coming out over the last couple of weeks. And I know you guys are more on the digital side of things, so I want to keep you guys abreast of that.
Let's be clear. One of us is.
That's right. Not Clayton. Now, listen, before we came on, Todd and I were getting ready to throw down. Now, keep in mind, I'm not up with what's going on right now with the new 52 at DC. But the last time I enjoyed reading an Aquaman book was when Peter David was on it. And this is like 2 decades ago we're talking about now. I thought he had an excellent run on Aquaman. And Todd, you had the audacity to imply that them's fighting words. What am I missing out on?
You're missing out on the new Geoff Johns, Ivan Reis Aquaman from the new 52.
Well, Geoff Johns does tend... He has the golden touch there at DC.
Now, I've heard rumors, like Geoff Johns has been lending his name to a lot of different projects, but he might not be intimately involved, perhaps the way that he's been involved with Justice League. Any truth to that, or are his hands all over this thing?
It feels like his hands are all over it to me. I mean, it's as good as anything he's ever done. I think it's less than the cosmic spanning books that he's been doing with Green Lantern. So it's more focused on the character of Aquaman and his girlfriend Mara and some other side characters. So I think it helps that he doesn't have like all these players. It's a much smaller scope.
And I know you mentioned there about Geoff Johns phoning it in. Todd and I talk all the time. Right now, Geoff Johns at the comfortable 3-book limit. Justice League, Aquaman, and Green Lantern. If they announce he is writing a 4th book, start getting worried about one of those other 3, because usually that's when one of them starts having a couple cracks in the foundation.
So what's good about this book? Because I'm thinking about buying it.
All right.
You guys are starting to sell me a little bit here.
Okay. Aquaman's the biggest joke in the world, right?
Right.
Everybody makes fun of him. Pop culture, from Big Bang Theory to The State years ago, everybody. They address it in this book. He stops a bank heist and the cops are like, do you need water? Like, goofing on him. He goes out to eat and a blogger type person comes up to him and essentially says to him, hey, Aquaman, why do you suck? and they address it, and Aquaman's like, I don't suck. Here's the things that I do. And in 2 issues, I think they have done more goodwill toward Aquaman than the last 15, 20 years of bad press he's gotten.
Well, I'd certainly be excited to, or just the prospect that Aquaman's being well done is very exciting to me, because I think, for a variety of reasons, and this is, I don't know, I almost feel like this is the kind of thing we should ask of like a Mark Waid or Michael Uslan type, but I never really understood back in the day how it is when they were selecting the characters that were going to be part of the Super Friends, which I think is where Aquaman's problems began. Aquaman somehow got the nod in that early incarnation, when it was a more tight-knit group of Superman, Wonder Woman, Batman, and Robin. Why he got picked out of all the available characters, because that put him in a tier of character that he always had a difficult time aspiring to. He was never, in my opinion, a bigger deal than The Flash or a bigger deal than Green Lantern, but the way he was presented in Super Friends, it was like you were expected to accept him as an equivalent of Superman or Batman, and he didn't really function well at that level.
Well, I know from the original Justice League back in the 60s, the core group of 5, before there was a Batman and a Superman on the group, it was Green Lantern, Flash, Martian Manhunter, Aquaman, and then the 5th one, depending on what time frame of DC you're reading, it was Wonder Woman or Black Canary. But Aquaman was there from day one. Now, obviously, I think Aquaman at the time probably looked like a little bit more marketable of a character than Black Canary, maybe, or Martian Manhunter for whatever reason. But, yeah, he's got a lot to overcome, but this Geoff Johns run is doing really good strides to get him there. And I know, Clayton, you had mentioned a while ago that you read The Blackest Night digitally. Is that correct?
Correct, yeah.
The main Blackest Night miniseries, the artist on that, as Todd mentioned, Ivan Rice, he's the artist on this as well, and it is a beautiful-looking book.
Oh, nice. Nice. That's one of the things that gets to translate really well on some of these, certainly on the tablet. I was out and had spoken to Mike. Do you remember this? I think I had spoken with Jim Lee and a couple of other folks at a Comic-Con.
Ron Lim was one of them, as I'm a dyed-in-the-wool Ron Lim fan from back in the day.
That's right. And I chatted with Ron Lim, and they're excited about this. Certainly excited about the digital format. Gets a way to show off their artwork in a way that does not translate on the page.
Well, I haven't made the jump to digital yet, but there's a whole controversy actually with that. I don't know if you guys have been following along with that. The Amazon Kindle Fire is coming out later this year, I think.
Yeah, and actually, it comes out in Today's Tuesday. Today is Tuesday. Today is Tuesday, November 15th. It comes out today.
So a couple months ago, DC announced that they were going to have 100 different of their top-selling trades available exclusively on the Kindle Fire. And when that announcement was made, Barnes & Nobles said, well, if we can't have the digital exclusivity of these books, we're not going to sell them in print either. And there were pictures all over the place online of Barnes & Noble stores with empty shelves of all those DC trades that were taken off the shelf. Well, just recently, with the new Nook tablet that Barnes & Noble is putting out, they said in kind of sort of veiled terms that they might have an exclusivity with Marvel coming up.
Right.
And that's going to be a huge divide if one device is going to have DC exclusivity, and the other device is going to have Marvel exclusivity.
We'll see how long that lasts, though. I mean, we'll see how much, you know, how many books are being, because I haven't seen sales numbers yet from Marvel or DC to know how well it's selling on the iPad, but I have to imagine that, you know, look, it's going to be selling, you know, when you've got 50 million iPads out in the wild right now, and many, many millions more expected to be sold this Christmas, the fact that the Nook is going to have any sort of leg up on the competition would really be surprising to me. But, you know, what I'm hearing, at least this was part of the announcement this week from Barnes & Noble, is having the digital comic experience, you know, exclusive to the new Barnes & Noble tablet Nook. So I don't know. It's a weird environment. I don't think it translates to that small of a screen, personally. I think it looks nicer on an iPad screen, which is almost 10 inches large.
And see, that's the thing. I've never seen a comic on one of those tablet devices, iPad or otherwise. But it's going to be very interesting to see how the digital thing pans out. I know just last week, Incredible Hulk number 2, Incredible Hulk number 1, we had talked about it last time we were on. It was Marvel's biggest selling book for the month of October. Well, a week before it was supposed to come out, it actually comes out tomorrow. A week before it was supposed to come out, it leaked online through Marvel's own app. And
whoops.
Right, whoops. And that's going to be the problem with this digital thing. You know, a retailer isn't going to accidentally put a book out on the stands a week early because he doesn't have it yet. But when these things are done digitally, all it takes is one little line of code and your number one book gets sent out to everybody for free a week early.
Or maybe just Marvel's trying to get a little PR and get it out there. So let it slip.
Right, I think they could do worse because, and you guys can speak to this a little better than Clayton and I, I'm just assuming, but I would guess, you know, the Hulk is probably not, in terms of sales numbers, able to challenge like the Spider books or the X books, generally speaking.
Well, like I said, generally speaking, and I'll save this for our show, and I don't want to bore you guys with like the number crunching of things, but these days, a lot of the X books are getting outsold by second printings of Aquaman number 1.
So the tables have turned.
Interesting. Yes. You've roped me in. You're already breaking my bank with the choices. So I'm gonna have to check out Aquaman. I'm gonna get on that bandwagon. I want to ask you though about some Marvel books because it seems like Marvel's now diving into that. Maybe I'm wrong about this, but they're sort of diving into the. All right, we're gonna go back to issue zero. We're gonna go back to number one again. We're gonna try to get on this bandwagon. And one of Mike's favorite books, Ghost Rider.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a huge fan of Nicolas Cage. Ghost Rider number 5 out this week, and you know, is this book, now that they're back to number 5, they started over with this, is this book any good? I've been seeing reviews that saying it's pretty good.
Todd, you want to handle that one? I haven't picked up a Ghost Rider book in a couple years.
I haven't picked up a Ghost Rider book since Danny Ketch, which would be the 1990s.
Oh, come on, guys. Now, I read that Danny Ketch series as well because I love the art team of Salterez and Texiera on that. But I was always a Johnny Blaze fan. Like, I kept waiting for that. And for a while, you know, they did return Blaze, I think, because they were aware of, you know, the movie coming and they wanted it to have a sort of seamless presentation. But it lacked the charm of that 70s book. And, you know, one of my favorite books, as bizarre as it was The Champions from the 1970s, which was like, you know, in terms of the greater hierarchy, like even the Defenders look down their nose at the Champions. I keep waiting for like that awesome Ghost Rider book with Johnny Blaze in it to come back. And there have been some weird ones. You know, they did a couple miniseries that were painted in a really strange way, I thought. They had really like macabre artwork to them, but it never really captured my attention. Like something about it wasn't, I don't know.
I remember those. I'm trying to remember who wrote them, but it was Johnny Blaze trying to escape from hell every day on his motorcycle at night. And yeah. That one I actually picked up. That was pretty cool. But the new one I know is I'm pretty sure the new Ghost Rider is a woman now.
Yes, I was going to say I know the new Ghost Rider is a lady.
Yeah, now that you say that, I'm looking at her in a leather outfit. Yes, those are breasts.
I don't know how a skeleton has breasts, but that's another story.
I hadn't thought about that.
Mike, I know you'd mentioned the Champions and the Defenders, and you guys had also mentioned about Marvel's new number ones and point ones and everything else like that. I didn't get a chance to read it yet because my shop was sold out of it, but Marvel put out this huge 64-page, like, giant point one, which is supposed to be the launch of a whole bunch of new series, one of them being a new Defenders book, and I know Todd got a chance to read it. I didn't get a chance to read it because by the time I got to the shop, it was sold out. But what was anything good in there, Todd?
None of the stories really grab me, but there's one interesting one that I kind of like, where it's a Days of Future Past where the mutants have finally won, which is a reverse of, you know, everything they've done in X-Men with that, and there's only 5 or 6 humans left, and Homo Superior has taken over, and they decide, these 5 humans, that they're going to take back. You know, they're not going to take it anymore. And I was like, that's an interesting swerve on, like, what X-Men's been doing for years, that, like, you know, that the mutants are always the minority. And here we finally have an alternate universe. And I'm not really sure how they're going to bring it into the main Marvel universe, but that's one of them that I would like to look into.
I have a question for you. All right, go ahead, Mike. Were you going to ask something?
No, go ahead, Mr. Morris.
I'm curious about the new 52. Some of the questions floating around out there about whether or not it's been bold enough to justify this. I mean, we talk about it as a marketing move, right? Of course it was a marketing move, but did they need to do it, right? I mean, were there big enough risks taken with the new 52 to justify all of this?
I don't want to say it's too soon to tell, but... again, I don't want to get too deep into the actual sales numbers because I'm really, really obsessed with them. When they get released, I like comb over them like I have no life, and some would say I may not. But the sales that DC had in September, they had not had sales that high in almost 6 years. So they had to shake up the apple cart as well. Now, usually whenever a new series is launched, let alone 52 new series, the average percent of attrition for people who stop buying issue 2 is usually between 20 to 35%. Usually. DC's issue 2s, when they came out in October, had an average decrease of 6%. 15 of the 52 books actually saw their numbers go up, which is unheard of.
Exactly.
So, right now, I'd say it's good because the numbers are staying right where they need to be, well above that 20 to 35% attrition and books picking up numbers. But let's see how that looks in January. Let's see how that looks in February. Actually, the true test is when the issue 6s and 7s come out, because Dan DiDio, the head honcho at DC, more or less said a lot of these books that are the lower tier books, your Men of War, your Blackhawks, your Red Hood and the Outlaws, they're going to have 6 issues to get their footing. And if they don't got their footing by 6 issues, there isn't going to be a 7th issue. So that's when you're going to see that real change around that 6th or 7th issue to see how many of those books are going to be last issue.
I mean, I was in my local comic shop. My retailer told me Swamp Thing's number 2's numbers were up, and it's getting a second print. It sold better than number 1, Swamp Thing. To me, that's just astounding.
Now, Swamp Thing hasn't exactly been a big mover and shaker since Alan Moore and back in the day. And
not since Aquaman was good back in the day.
I see what you're trying to do there, Todd.
Yeah, this is Wonder what Woman. To do. What about Wonder Woman? I know Mike's a huge fan of Wonder Woman.
Mostly Linda Carter, but Wonder Woman too.
Yeah, what's going on with that? I mean, have they finally managed to do anything interesting with her?
I think so. It's one of the books that I actually love, and it's weird because it actually has more of a horror slant than anything. It's a very creepy done book, which like blew me away when I read it. I'm like, you're gonna try and go creepy with Wonder Woman? But a lot of the mythology, they brought in centaurs at one point, and you're like, okay, well, what are you gonna do with centaurs? But basically the way you make a centaur is you cut off the head of a horse, and then like the demon sprouts out from the neck wound. And I'm like, drawn by Cliff Chiang, that's how I'm guessing his name is. It looked beautiful. And Azzarello writing it, I'm like, this is a book I'm in for the long haul.
And Brian Azzarello is usually a crime writer. He wrote the Vertigo series, 100 Bullets, which is like one of those like critically acclaimed crime books. And that's usually what he draws. This is his first time really dipping his toe into the superhero community. And, you know, I've tried Wonder Woman so many times in the past, I've been burned. I didn't pick this one up. But it is a beautiful-looking book, as Todd mentions, and they're really tying the Greek mythology into things. Isn't it like, didn't they say in the book that Zeus, or who's actually her father now? She's not, like, sculpted from clay and all that jazz?
They're hinting, as far as I'm concerned, that the story on Paradise Island, the story of the clay child still exists, but it might be Zeus who in the book apparently gets around. So he might have, you know, fathered the baby with Hippolyta, but we're not quite sure yet.
Well, I think anything that gets away from that ridiculous molded from clay story is a step in the right direction, DC.
Indeed.
I was never a fan of that whatsoever.
Well, listen, guys, we're really excited about launching the weekly long box. I know our audience is really excited about it. And I think, you know, you guys bring a level of expertise and knowledge that certainly Mike and I don't have. So we'd love to have you back here popping up on the Grizz on a, you know, somewhat regular basis. But in the meantime, gear up, guys. Your show's coming.
That's right. Mere days away, loyal Egghead Army. Get ready. The gents from the weekly long box are coming.
I knew my mom was right that I'd be famous someday.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you. We'll see you soon. We'll see you on your own show coming up very soon, guys.
Thanks for having us again, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, gents. Hey, we asked you to send in your guilty pleasure song selections because at the end of the episode, we like to play one. And some of the ones that have been coming in through our Twitter stream include Kiss from a Rose by Seal. That's the Desert Pope on Twitter sent us that one. I don't know. That's tough. That's kind of like a teeth gnasher for me. Even with the Batman tie in there, I'm not so big on Kiss from a Rose. What about you?
I don't know. I don't mind it, but it's not pleasurable.
Right.
So it doesn't
there's no pleasure. It's just guilty.
Right. It doesn't really rise to the level of pleasure for me.
Guilty is charged. Chris Lariato writes to us, Take It on the Run by REO Speedwagon, which I think might be one of the worst music videos of all time.
Take it on the run, baby.
I don't enjoy any REO Speedwagon songs. Do you?
I don't think so. I think they remind me, I mean, this, for me, I know I'm going to hear it from people, but I'm not a fan of Journey.
Right.
I could lump REO Speedwagon and Journey in the same wheelbarrow and dump them off a cliff.
They're like the poor man's Styx.
Right.
Is REO Speedwagon. Like Chris DeBerg is the poor man's Paul Carrack. JR of OP writes to us, The Game of Love by Santana featuring Michelle Branch. Well, you'll be surprised to know we played that.
Yeah, that was actually one of your guilty pleasure songs right. During the summer.
Yeah, it was one of the last ones that we did. I picked before we turned it over to the fan base here to come up with that. Hey, by the way, if you were tweeting us asking about when we're going to review Breaking Bad Season 2, we don't know yet, but it'll be in a couple weeks.
Yeah, we just finished Season 1, so that was last week's episode. I'm like one or two episodes in, and it is good.
So we also got here, this is from N.I. Maiden, writes in, One Night in Bangkok by Murray Head. That was one of the very first songs we ever played here. Over 100 episodes ago in the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe, if you can believe that. That was like maybe in the first two or three we ever played.
True.
Was that one. Roboduke, who's always quick with his suggestions, writes in, Chardet's Smooth Operator, I would veto this. I'm windows down on Chardet.
I'm close. I mean, I love Chardet, right? And I love, have all of her albums. But it's a little embarrassing.
Yeah, why?
Well, it's just a tad embarrassing, right? A dude rolling down the street, bobbing his head back and forth to some Sade, like with the windows down. Like, that might be a little, hey, roll the windows up, a little embarrassing. That dude was just listening to Sade. Did you hear that?
Oh,
he was singing.
On.
He was singing that while he was driving down the street.
I think, so. I mean, maybe a different Sade song I'd put the windows down, but Smooth Operator, like, maybe
yeah, that's
sweet,
a pretty famous.
Sweetest Taboo, maybe the windows are up.
Right. Love Deluxe. Yeah.
I think Smooth Operator, windows down, Roboduke.
All right, make a good point, yeah.
So keep those suggestions coming. And there's one here, actually, that I really like, which is oddly appropriate. I'm going to keep sitting on it from the God of Puck. In case we don't see something better come in, I'm going to serve that up at the end of the episode. But before we get to Guilty Pleasures and other things, Grizzly, we should stop for a moment and thank our friends and longtime show sponsors, Gazelle.com. Our friends over at Gazelle want your used consumer electronics. They'll either buy them from you or they'll recycle them in an eco-responsible way. So if you've got a cell phone or an MP3 player laying around, maybe you've got like a monitor, you've got a digital camera, for example, that you don't use anymore, you've got satellite radio equipment, you've got even camera lenses, for example, or calculators, all kinds of consumer goods
You go to their website, you tell them what you've got, they're going to make you an offer. If you decide to take them up on it, you're going to mail that away using the prepaid shipping label that you can print right out on your printer. It's really quite convenient, and away it goes. Their team will evaluate the condition. They'll issue you a payment. The whole process takes about a week from once they get your box in. It couldn't be easier. They'll keep you up to date so you know what's going on with your order. And on some recent rare occasions, we've even come to find that the goods we've sent in are worth more than they'd originally thought, and they paid us the extra amount. Which I find to be terrific. So, if you want to find out more about Gazelle.com, how simple it is, if you want to browse the 250,000 different items that they're willing to take off your hands, you can do so over at Gazelle.com. They even have live chat support that runs at least Monday through Friday. You can jump right into a chat room with some of their reps, and I think on the weekends as well, they offer live support. So if you're a little nervous about how the whole process goes, they're really great about taking you by the hand and walking you right through it. And now, having done it a few times myself, I can tell you, it is really quite simple. I can do my whole Gazelle pile in about 20 minutes, and then I get a nice payment in my PayPal, or I could get a paper check. I could get a gift that's actually like a redemption code to use for gifts or what have you over at Amazon.com. You could even donate the money to charity if you want. And never to fear, because whether they're buying your used consumer goods or recycling it for you, they will always wipe all your personal information off of it. So you needn't be in fear of identity theft, my friends. You will like Gazelle.com because Clayton and I like them. And if we didn't, they wouldn't be a sponsor of this show, because we never bring you crap here on The Grizz. We only bring you la creme de la creme.
That's
so
right.
Go see our friends, Gazelle.com, especially right now. It's a great time. Clear out some junk in your house. Make some money. You're going to need it for the holidays, trust me.
Indeed. Make room for that new Kindle Fire you're thinking about picking up. I just got one, by the way.
Did you?
Reviewing it as we speak.
That's a big surprise.
Yeah, it is. Well, hey, you know what? I don't worry about all the little pissy reviews about the little thing. Like every stinking Android phone that comes out, give me a break, right?
Are there a lot of Android phones?
Oh, my God. They're giving them away at Supercuts now, and that's not even a joke. They're
really?
Giving them away at Supercuts.
Wow.
That goes to show you the, well, first of all, the level of care I have for Android phones. But nevertheless, you know, some of the big phones I'll review, you know, like the Galaxy S2 or the Nexus or something like that. The big releases that I know are going to, people are interested in, and certainly the Kindle Fire, the Amazon Kindle Fire, everyone's boned up about. I'll tell you this, because I'm sure our audience is probably interested. As you know, I review technology for Fox. So
is that right?
It is. The first thing I notice is how heavy it is. I mean, it really feels almost as heavy as the iPad, and it's half the size. You know, pretty sturdy. It reminds me a little bit of the BlackBerry Playbook. Pretty thick. It's got that like rubber back to it. Mm-hmm. It's pretty wide too. It's almost got like that 16:9 aspect ratio, that wide screen. And I think the only reason you'd watch, you know, you'd hold it in that landscape orientation is to watch a movie, mm-hmm. which they're pushing big time. I mean, this is really like a consumption device. Mm-hmm. The first thing you do when you log
in, eat it.
It's delicious. It's like a chocolate
bar.
It's
for consumption.
The first thing you do when you log in, it goes right to like a bookshelf with your content. So it's not like you have a whole choice of apps and things to do. Like, hey, maybe I want to go into GarageBand and make some music today, like on the iPad. This is really about just consuming the content that you have. Mm-hmm. So books, TV shows, movies, maybe some subscriptions to magazines, newspapers, and such. It's all right there. And, of course, any of the music you buy on the Amazon Marketplace is all right there as well. But there's no 3G. So, like, I was driving this afternoon, and my wife was driving, I was playing with it, and you really feel like this is a handicapped device without 3G or internet. You need to have it on Wi-Fi. Otherwise, you know, if you want to, like, stream some music, maybe from your Amazon Cloud account. I had some They Might Be Giants that I'd bought. I bought the new They Might Be Giants album on Amazon. So it was there. It showed up that I had purchased it, but, of course, it wasn't downloaded on this device, which you can do, but it relies, of course, on Wi-Fi to be able to stream it. So if I just hit play, it was just searching, obviously, and wouldn't let me play it. But I know it's exciting. I mean, I think it's the first not real competition for the iPad, because it's not in the same category. I think it's going to crush the Barnes & Noble Nook, though, in that price range, like $199. For a lot of people, this is all they want, you know? They just want to be able to sit there and browse some books that they bought and read a few magazines and watch a movie or two here and there. Mm-hmm. So for those folks, I think it's great. But I will say, people ask me all the time online. They say, "What? You know, my husband wants an e-reader for Christmas. He just wants an e-reader. He just wants to read books." And I have to say, for that, I, you know, the iPad's great for everything, right? But when it comes to just reading books and you want an e-reader, it doesn't get any better than the brand new Kindle. I think the $99 Kindle, I think there's four of them now, different, you know, Kindle price points and everything. Mm-hmm. But the new Kindle, $99, that's the one without the ads on it. There's one you can get for $79 that comes with some advertisements. I would honestly say between the two of those, that's what you want to get. Mm-hmm. It has the buttons on the side. I actually prefer the buttons over the touch Kindle now. So that's my suggestion. The contrast looks great. It's e-ink display, so it's all of the words. The text is very crisp. Just very nicely defined font. So it looks great on the page. The e-ink display just looks great. They've really done incredible things over the generations of the new Kindles, so the contrast ratio is just really vivid. Hmm. And plus, you can read it outside in the sunlight, which is something you can't do with the new Kindle Fire because it's got a glass screen. So it's almost impossible to read in the sun.
And what's the other screen? What's the other one got?
Well, that one has the e-ink display. So have you ever played with just a basic Kindle, where it has like a black and white screen to it?
I did shoplift one once, but that was it.
Well, based on your shoplifting experience,
get it out of the box. I had a guy waiting outside who,
you just pawned 40, it off.
$40, yeah.
The screen is black and white. It has an e-ink display. So even in bright sunlight, it's just like reading a page of a paper. I mean, it's ridiculous. It works great. Mm-hmm. Of course, the iPad and the Kindle Fire out in bright sunlight just doesn't cut it. So mm-hmm. if you're thinking about getting just an e-reader this Christmas, go with the $99 Kindle, the basic Kindle with the touch buttons on the side, because that touch screen, there's like a new Kindle that has a black and white screen that you can swipe your finger across it. Nah, you don't need that.
Given that, right? I mean, that's obviously a big thing. I notice it with my iPad too, about the glare from the glass. Isn't there like an accessory, like some kind of like snap-on screen or filter that you can use to diminish that?
There are a few. I think 3M makes some like anti-glare screens and things like that.
Do they not really work well, or they don't catch on for some reason? Because it seems like that's a big thing, right?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, where do you use your iPad mostly, right? Maybe on an airplane.
On a mountaintop. Oh, right.
In the bright sunlight.
Right.
At the tanning booth. No, you use your Kindle mostly on the couch, right? And I use mine mostly on the couch or in bed reading a book, when I'm going to bed, or reading some news, or on the train. So I'm always inside when I have it. But, like in the summer, you go to the beach for a week. That's when it gets to be a little annoying. But I don't like those screens. I honestly don't like much of cases on my devices. I feel like they go to great lengths. And you certainly read the Steve Jobs biography. You get the sense of how much time went into every little detail. So, and Steve was really upset after the first Kindle or the first iPad came out. He noticed like all these people taking this like elegantly designed device that they specifically made a certain way, and they were shoving it in like these big, padded cases. And he's like, that's not what we want, So then that's why they developed the smart case, the little flip down front facing one with the magnets. Mm-hmm. He wanted something that would protect the front screen, but didn't take away from the design of the iPad and the way it was meant to be held and everything else. So, those screens, I always find them a little wonky. And plus, they always get those little air bubbles in it. You ever see people that try to put one of those little things on their iPhone? They have the screens they'll put on, the little protective screens, and they get like the air bubbles, and it just never looks good. Mm-hmm. So they make them though. I've never tried them though. I think 3M makes some. I think the Joy Factory makes some anti-glare screens, but anyway, that's my little run. I'm going to play more with the Kindle Fire this week, and I'm going to have a video up on foxnews.com later this week of my review of the Kindle Fire, but I've just started playing with it. So it's a fun device. If you just want to watch movies, TV, and read some books here and there, it's a nice little device. Mm-hmm.
All right.
My thoughts, for what it's worth.
So, here at the Grizzly Productions Network, which encompasses not only the mothership, which you're on right now, if you didn't know, but it also encompasses the podcast Clayton and I do every Friday, Daddy on Board. You can catch Clayton with his wife Natalie over in the Trending Show. We've also got the Sports Report with Paul Roberts, which is our newest and latest and greatest, at least until the weekly long box arrives. We've got Mommy Beta, etc., etc. And the fine folks over at Sonos have entrusted to us, for the purpose of giving them away, to great fans like you, an awesome sound system consisting of the Sonos Bridge, the Play 3, and the Play 5. This is an incredible sound system that would retail for about $750, and we're just giving them away. We're just giving them away, Clayton. Now, I recently got this system from Sonos, and I love it. I love the fact that I can put different music on in different rooms. I love the fact that I can sync it all up so every room is hearing the same song at the same time. I can make playlists for separate rooms. I can independently control the volume in each room. It's incredible. And I do it all from my iPad. It works like a remote control wherever I go as long as I'm on the same Wi-Fi network as the Sonos. It is a technological marvel. And Clayton, if one of our loyal Egghead Army wanted to get their hands on the next Sonos system we're giving away, where should they turn their attention?
Well, we just gave one away on the Trending Show this past week. Congratulations to Dan Peck. I think he's a long time Grizzly Productions listener. I think, if I'm not mistaken, anyway, I recognized his avatar and I recognized his name. So that was nice to see that. I always love that when that happens, and we've had success with that. So next week, a little bit later this week on Daddy on Board, we're giving away our next Sonos. Mm-hmm. So you've got to check that out. Daddy on Board. And then I think the show after that will be the Paranormal Report. We have one more to give away after that.
So what do they have to do to be in the running?
All they have to do is listen to Daddy on Board this week. We'll give them a little bit of a trivia question. Mm-hmm. It's very, very simple. You go over to our Facebook fan page, and you'll have to like our Grizzly Productions Facebook fan page. And that'll probably be the easiest way to do it. Although we're about to launch our brand new Google Plus page, so maybe we'll have people go over there for this week's contest. But we'll announce that on Daddy on Board this week. We'll lay it all out, and it'll be that simple, so you can enter and answer the trivia question and be entered, and we'll pick you at random. It's that easy.
All right.
I wouldn't make that up. Hey, by the way, I want to mention this. Today I was stuck in traffic, and I was like, God, when am I going to get home? You know, this is trying to head towards the Lincoln Tunnel and get out of the city, and my wife calls and she says, she said, I just heard on the radio. She said, are you stuck in traffic? I said, yeah. And she said, you know what you're stuck in? I said, no, other than traffic. She said, you're stuck in the traffic because the Dark Knight is filming a block from you. Mm. The Dark Knight Rises. And I about flipped out. I said, I've never been more thrilled to be stuck in traffic in my life.
That's right. Get out of the car, man.
Right. I was excited. I wanted to go see what was up.
Go get some spy photos.
Man, they're filming this thing all over the place.
They are. They've had quite a few crazy locations for this one, so I'm very, very excited for that. Next year is going to be a good year for superhero films. I wanted to tell you this because this really put a smile on my face, given everything that went into High Noon and everything else that's been going on lately. And, other than the fact it was great to High Noon, like I said, just have a lot of familiar faces and old friends there. My wife was there. It was just a great all-around experience. When Clayton and I were big World Wrestling Federation fans, where we watched religiously, among our favorites, and you've heard us talk about how much we love the 1-2-3 Kid and the emotion in our neighborhood when he and Marty Jannetty captured the tag team titles from the Quebecers on Monday Night Raw. But Clayton and I were both huge fans of the late, great Kurt Hennig.
Yeah.
Mr. Perfect. So much so that Clayton's first wrestling persona way back in the day was a bizarre tribute to Kurt Hennig, which I think involved wearing a plastic fedora at one point and a pair of Phillies shorts.
And a cape.
So, in my opinion, and I think in Clayton's opinion as well, and probably a lot of other people's opinions, Kurt Hennig really was one of the most entertaining professional wrestlers of all time. He was just a joy to watch, a pleasure to behold, and he brought just such incredible precision and great showmanship to his job that I think years and years and years from now, we will still be comparing people to Mr. Perfect, Kurt Hennig. And so I was actually, the reason I bring this up is because I was paid such a wonderful compliment by Marty Jannetty, who's also someone we admire and always enjoyed watching him. He said after the conclusion of yesterday's main event, and as I mentioned earlier, he was backstage and he was helping people out with critiques and feedback and advice and all this kind of great stuff. And he said to me, toward the end there, I really felt like you were channeling Mr. Perfect. And I thought, that's probably one of the best compliments I could ever, because it'd be one thing if just anybody said that, but a guy who actually wrestled Mr. Perfect said that, and I just had a big grin on my face after hearing that from Marty Jannetty, and it made me think back to one of the things about Mr. Perfect that I really remembered was, you know, they had that. You remember the period of time where something was wrong with his back,
right?
He was injured, and for a while he was just like a manager to Ric Flair. Do you remember this?
I do, yeah. He would just pop out on the side. He really couldn't walk. He always carried that towel with him.
Mm-hmm. As I remember it, he had a bad back injury, and he was getting a big settlement from Lloyd's of London, who insured him. And so in order to make sure that those insurance payments kept coming in, he could not actively wrestle. Like, that was part of the settlement agreement, that they had to conclude that his wrestling career had been ended by this in order for him to get the insurance settlement. But after a while, as this seemed to happen, this happened quite a few times in the 90s, where wrestlers, I think Road Warrior Animal was another one, who got a settlement from Lloyd's of London based on a career-ending injury, and then by virtue thereof could not ever wrestle again. But because all wrestlers get the itch to get back in, eventually they just decided, well, maybe I could make more money if I went back to wrestling than sitting at home collecting this insurance check. And Road Warrior Animal was one of them, and Mr. Perfect was one of them who went back as well. Do you remember that Survivor Series where, I think it ended up being like Razor Ramon and Ric Flair, and Randy Savage needed a partner, and the partner, I think it was originally supposed to be the Ultimate Warrior, and for some reason it became Mr. Perfect, and this was like his big, and it built to that. Do you remember that retirement match or whatever? I think it was Loser Leaves, where he wrestled Ric Flair on Monday Night Raw,
right,
and beat him with
the
Perfect Plex.
And that was it for Ric Flair.
Right, that was his swan song. Like that, I just remember that whole run. That, even though some people would say that wasn't Mr. Perfect's best run, like his Intercontinental run where he was the rival of Bret Hart was some excellent stuff. That's the stuff I remember. You know, I remember some of his interviews more than I remember some of his matches.
Right.
Yeah, he was one of a kind. And you know, his son is currently under contract to WWE now.
Wow, I didn't even know he had a son. And how did he die? He died like some sort of drug thing, right?
I think that was a contributing factor. A lot of the guys from that era, and it's scary to think about how many of them have passed away now, right? How many of those guys are dead? I mean, not just recently, right? We lost Macho Man Randy Savage in that auto accident.
Right.
But, I mean, the Big Boss Man, Road Warrior Hawk, I mean, blah, 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 blah. All these guys have passed away. Crush. Mr. Perfect, I think. I'm not 100% sure. But a lot of them, what it is they have an enlarged heart, which is the result of previous drug use. And it gives out, you know, they have heart failure or something else related to that, which is a real shame because, you know, so many of those guys, they would just be, one, it would be, I mean, of course, it's a shame when anyone dies, not to diminish that, but what an incredible asset they would be to future generations of wrestlers to have guys like that to learn from, because a lot of the best brains in the business are either they're inaccessible for whatever reason or they've really like they've become a tragic story, like Jake the Snake Roberts, you know, who like his unending battles with the bottle and drug addiction and everything else. Like the few times I've ever met him, and that was one of my favorites, we love Jake the Snake Roberts, to see him is that's one of the, you know, to turn it on its head, the idols that you shouldn't meet, top of the list, Jake the Snake Roberts. You don't want to hang out with him.
Yeah, I would think so. Of all the stories I've heard about him.
Yeah.
So I don't know, the final analysis of High Noon, I'm just curious. It was a big success online, the DVD's available now, what's the deal?
No, the DVDs will be available very shortly, though. We did have a little snafu that I became aware of. It was actually at my table last night for dinner was the guy who does a lot of the art direction now for the DVD covers. We were really fortunate in that we had originally come to an agreement to have Umberto Ramos, who used to be on Amazing Spider-Man very recently, was going to be doing the cover for High Noon. And then just, I don't know what happened. He just vanished into the ether on us somehow. And so we were lucky enough to get a guy who did my favorite DVD cover of the year, the Clunk and Love cover. Former artist for DC Comics named Joe Phillips is coming back on to tackle the art duties for High Noon. And I would wager to say, because the team at Smart Mark Video, they move incredibly fast. No sooner does that art come in than that DVD will be out, because I know people really want that. They want all the extras. I think there's going to be something like 14 bonus featurettes on the High Noon DVD. this brand new original artwork from Joe Phillips is coming in, and all the matches, including the Jigsaw El Generico match, which was only part of the pre-show originally. It's going to be cleaned up the way in the inimitable fashion of Smart Mark Video, with all the bells and whistles, and presented to you as perfectly in the digital medium as we are possibly capable of. So and a collector's item to be sure. So I wouldn't be surprised if it's out before you and I talk again. It really just boils down to how quick that artwork rolls in, and we'll take it from there. But I'll tell you all about that. And one of the big hits of the iPay-per-view was we rolled out a great commercial from our friends over at Axiva, who made the Chikara Color Tunes mobile app, which is now available in the App Store. And no sooner did the commercial go out on the stream and everything else, I happened to be walking through the locker room, and I saw there were a couple of the wrestlers who were just, they were there to lend their support, but they weren't wrestling on the event. Where they're playing with the Chikara Color, like they had just downloaded it themselves, and we're playing with the app in the back, which is a lot of fun, and it's fun for kids of all ages. And you certainly don't need to be a Chikara fan by any stretch of the imagination. It's a great coloring doodling app. It's got a lot of little Easter eggy type stuff. It's a lot of fun.
It's got a lot bunch of videos in there too. So it's not just a coloring app. Had a chance to look at the early runs of it, so that's great. So what is it called?
Chikara Color Tunes, or it might be listed as Color Tunes Chikara. I'm not sure which way it's presented in the App Store, because like you, I was on the team of beta testers to get all the bugs out of the system, and the people at Axiva really just did a fantastic job on this. And the best part was seeing some of the other Chikara guys playing with it, and they were all like crowded around. The one guy had it on his phone, and they were all just like crowded around, like looking at it, like, "Oh my god, this is so awesome!" So that was just like a ton of fun, and. So check that out. Yeah, and if you do, we'd love to hear your feedback about that, or we'd love to hear your feedback about High Noon. In general, we'd love to hear your feedback about The Grizz. Certainly your 5-star reviews would really be tremendous help to us right now in the iTunes store, as we're getting ready to, I think it'll be maybe as soon as next week, that Clark Dashler from Johnny Hates Jazz, the guy from Johnny Hates Jazz, will be here on The Grizz in the next episode or two. And then shortly thereafter, you and I got to figure out when we're going to watch season 2 of Breaking Bad.
Yeah, I've started episode 1, and my wife and I looked at each other at the end of the episode, and we said, "Oh my god, this season is going to be so good." Mm. The way the first episode of season 2 ends, you just I cannot wait. We're going to watch some more tonight. I think we might watch episode 2 and 3 tonight. Mm. But it is so good. And that's why everyone was saying, seasons 2 and 3 really rope you in. Is it in season 4 right now?
I think so.
So I had that backwards. I thought it was in season 5. So, but I guess it's only in season 4 right now. But yeah. So I guess maybe we'll figure out over the next. Can you finish it in a week?
How many episodes are in this season? Do you know?
Good question.
I could probably get in 5 or 6 episodes a week if I really pushed.
Okay, so maybe we could do 2 weeks. Let's do...
Right, next week doesn't make sense. If we've got Johnny Hates Jazz coming on the program to tell us all about their new album and what they've been up to for all these intervening years and everything else.
Yeah, we're going to call it... I think we'll call it the Where Are They Now feature that we're going to start. Mm-hmm. Where Are They Now in the Grizzly Bear Egg Cafe? And, this will be anyone from the 80s, from the 90s. It can be anyone from the 70s. It could be anyone, not just music. We might be...
They do have to be alive, though. That's going to be one qualifier.
Right, that's going to be one caveat so we can get them on the show.
Right. Hey, this just dawned on me now. We have to ask their people if we can hear a sneak peek of what the new album sounds like.
Ooh, yeah.
That would be really interesting.
They can give us a new track, I'm sure. That'd be great.
I don't know, but it won't hurt to ask. We can certainly ask. So, that's very cool. We're looking forward to that. And then probably the week after, or at most the week after that, we'll be talking about season 2 of Breaking Bad. So if you want to join in the discussion with us, Netflix subscribers, you can stream that. You can watch it instantly. Of course, you can get the discs as well if the interminable loading screens are the bane of your existence, much as they are mine. But in a week or two, we'll talk more about Breaking Bad season 2. And I can't think of anything else.
I think that's about it.
Right on. So,
yeah, check out the weekly long box, and please here's what we'll do: as soon as the weekly long box launches, we will tweet that out from our Grizzly Produced Twitter account, Grizzly Produced on Twitter. So follow us there. So as soon as that show is ready to hit, we'll get you in on the first episode. and become a part of it. And of course, we'll create the Twitter account and get that all up and running for you as well. But in the meantime, follow us over on Grizzly Produced and help make that show a big success as we head into the holidays. We're really excited about that.
Indeed we are. So, to wrap up today's episode, and I think this is kind of fitting given what this week's discussion tended to lilt upon, I would have never thought to think to play this as a guilty pleasure song selection, but I will agree in that it's Windows Up because I'm singing along. This is a true guilty pleasure in my opinion. I Am the God of Puck on Twitter writes to us, how about playing Real American by Rick Derringer, which you may know is Hulk Hogan's entrance theme from way back in the day. So I'm all in favor of that, right?
Yeah, that's
sing
a good
along,
one.
Will you not? The great Rick Derringer. Yeah, rock and roll hoochie coo. That's the guy. Here's Real American.
I am a real American. Fight for the rights of every man. I am a real American. Fight for what's right. Fight for